No one ever moves away from my town. Now, people leave, sure, for a weekend or a week, even a month, but they always come back. And if you're born here, you die here. I'll call the town Grand View, even though it's not its name, for your safety and mine. It's a small Midwestern city with a few nice parks and a pretty good community college that everyone goes to. It's flourished through the 21st century, while a lot of nearby towns lost people and jobs. We were even mentioned in the New York Times last year as a rare Rust Belt success story. They credited our prosperity to family-owned corporations here choosing not to leave, but truth is, nobody leaves. Even young kids know this. In most places, hearing so-and-so moved to the big city isn't cause for alarm. In Grandview, it's slang for committing suicide. There's no ambiguity because nobody moves to any big city. Even so, most people don't feel trapped here. I didn't. Until recently. Growing up in Grandview, I assumed that I'd stick around like everyone else. Yeah, I went to the local college. After graduating, got a job bartending at one of the hangout spots. I also performed there every Friday night with my band, as our lead singer and guitarist. We're a cut-rate version of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but at the time, I thought that we were incredible. It's cliche, but I dreamed of making it big as a musician in a large city. I broached the subject with our drummer, Ronnie, one Friday night after our show. We were carrying Ronnie's kick drum off the stage together, and he looked up at me in surprise. "Leave town?" he asked. "Nobody ever leaves Grandview." I dropped the topic, but the thought of wasting my potential in Grandview ate at me. 2 months later, I'd leased an apartment in Chicago, figuring I'd find a job once I got there. Everyone I knew was shocked by my plans, but most were ultimately supportive, my parents included. The day I packed up my beat-up Toyota Corolla, they came out to my apartment to say goodbye. My dad chewing his lip and saying, "I love you, just be careful. I was born here and I never left." He thought for a moment. "Nobody ever leaves Grandview." "I know, Dad, and I will." As I was lifting the last suitcase into the back seat, an older man passed by on the sidewalk. I was sure I'd seen him around the neighborhood, but couldn't remember speaking to him before. "You taking a trip?" he asked. "Moving to Chicago," I announced, a little defiantly. The man smiled slightly and cocked his head. "Don't you know?" he said. "Nobody ever leaves Grandview." My dad laughed. "Yeah," I said. "I've heard." I made it to Chicago, but I never found a job. 3 weeks after I arrived, I got a phone call from my mother. She'd been diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, and she wouldn't be getting better. I moved back home as soon as I could, telling myself I could leave again some other time. My mother lived for 2 more years. See, it was an immensely challenging period for me and my family, and I don't know if I'll ever really move past it. The only bright spot during this time was reconnecting with Catherine, an old high school crush. I ran into her at a bar and was surprised to learn that she remembered me. When we started dating, she became my source of strength through my mother's illness. A year after my mother's passing, we were engaged. Last week, 2 weeks before our wedding day, I had a panic attack. I was awake at 2 a.m., Catherine sleeping soundly next to me, and I felt the walls closing in. I remember my first night in Chicago and the fear I felt in the unfamiliar place, cut off from everyone and everything I knew. At the time, I'd been tempted to drive back home, but now I was worried that I'd never experience that kind of fear again. I could see my life laid out neatly before me, starting a family with Catherine, drinking with Ronnie and the band. It was the same life as everyone else in Grandview, and I'd been so close to something different. I couldn't stay. I left the room as quickly and quietly as I could, grabbing clothes and toiletries and tossing them in a suitcase. I stuffed the suitcase into my car and I pulled out of the driveway onto the deserted late-night roads. I was almost at the edge of town when I saw him. The silhouette of a man standing in the middle of the street. There was no way around him, so I stopped and cautiously cracked my window. He walked around to the side of the car. "Do you mind unlocking the passenger side door, Mr. Abrams? There are things I need to discuss with you." I didn't recognize the man, but somehow he knew my name. He wore a dark gray trench coat and thin, matching gloves. He was bald, save for a horseshoe of white hair around the back of his head. I I couldn't say why, but he terrified me. I'm sorry, I stammered. I don't know who you are. I'll rephrase. The man spoke calmly as he pulled a handgun from his trench coat and pointed it at my forehead through the window. Would you mind unlocking the passenger side door, Mr. Abrams? There are things I need to discuss with you. When he climbed into the passenger seat, I recognized him as the man I'd seen just before leaving for Chicago. He was old, but not wrinkled. The skin on his face was stretched tight across his skull. His hands and arms were skeletal, as well as long, thin, and bony. His movements were unhurried. And when he spoke again, it was in the same deliberate way. He emphasized his words, letting each one hang in the air for a moment before speaking the next.
I'm surprised you would pull a stunt like this, he said. After what you did to your mother? Is marrying the woman of your dreams not enough for you? Where is your gratitude?
He paused while I gaped at him.
I like your fiancé. I like your father. So I'm going to do something I don't usually do. I'm going to give you a choice. You could turn the car around and go home and never attempt to leave again.
He lifted the gun, pressing it to the right side of my head before I could move.
Or you could move to the big city. Period.
The implication was clear. I'll make it look like a suicide. Blood pounded in my head and I could barely think, staring at the dark road through the windshield as if it could save me. The gun was cold against my skin and finally I asked, What do you mean? What I did to my mother? The man didn't answer, only looking intently at me with a mixture of scorn and condescension. But I found I knew what he meant. She got sick because you moved away. I thought this irrationally many times before. Who are you? Again, no answer, only that icy stare. Why are you doing this to me?
I sustain grand view, the man said. I've been doing it for a long time.
He pressed the gun harder into my temple. There was nothing I could do, so I put the car back in the drive, and I began a slow U-turn to head home. The man brought the gun to his lap, turning to watch the street. For a second, out of the corner of my eye, he looked different. I could see the white bone under his translucent skin. His eyes became two glowing embers. The car filled with the scent of rot, and I nearly jumped out of my seat in panic. And then the vision and the smell were gone as quickly as they'd come. Gradually, my terror turned to exhaustion. You can't stop every car, I said quietly. He kept his eyes on the road, scanning the darkness.
Oh, I know, he said.
He sounded bored, and then he pressed his foot onto the gas pedal with surprising strength and steered the car towards a nearby tree. They found me the next morning. There's no evidence anyone else had been in the car. The doctors say I'm very lucky, and they're right. I'll never walk again, but I should regain full use of my upper body. Catherine and I even joke that I was always a slower runner than her, but with me in a wheelchair, she'll never be able to keep up. She's been extremely supportive, as always, and believed me when I told her I was taking a casual nighttime drive and dozed off. My dad says I'm very lucky to be marrying her, and he's right, too. All in all, things could be worse. But now I know it's true. Nobody ever leaves Grandview. Hey there, kids, it's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and thank you for watching tonight's video. I want to talk to you about one quick thing before we get into the real outro here, and that's going to be the Australian fires that are currently taking place. I'm pretty sure everybody has seen on their social media or on the news or what have you about what's taking place in Australia right now. The fires are raging out of control. There's something like 1.5 million acres that are currently on fire. It's pushing animals towards extinction, forcing people out of their homes. Many of them YouTubers and other creepypasta narrators that you probably listen to here. But one thing that actually kind of gets to me is that there's there's a lot of awareness about what's taking place down there. There's a lot of photos and videos I'm pretty sure that you've all seen, but nobody's really talking about where you can go to be able to donate, to be able to help either firefighters or relief funds or anything like that. And that's what I want to try to bring to you guys, or at least have you guys try to share around, even if you're not able to donate. If you look in the description down below, there's 4 different links there that I'm going to have on the videos for the next couple of weeks. And hopefully we can, and we, I mean, all of you can be able to share this around, and all of us together can be able to actually get some more eyes on where we can be able to go to help. I mean, yeah, we're a group of people that likes horror stories, horror movies, horror what have you. But I think one thing we can do that's at least powerful for us is we have the ability to minimize the amount of horror in real life. So thank you guys so much for watching or listening. If you're listening to this on the podcast, available on Spotify and on Apple and on SoundCloud and on Google or wherever you get your podcasts from, or if you're listening on the podcast, then thank you for watching on YouTube and subscribing to Mr. Creepypasta. And a very big thank you to my patrons from patreon.com/Mr. Creepypasta, such as Dr. Strawberry, Jordan Alexander Sanchez Chumpinski, Brianna Ventine Jensen, Stephanie Van Huss, Tristan Pelton, G Weevil 3, Diane Krause, Asia, The Red Oak Shield Virus, Sandy Barney, Nico Kyle, Caleb Dugal, Daniel Polson, Dante Rao, The Last Blade Song, The Ginger Bros, Don Mewmeister, Eliminator 86, Nebsky, Sky Harbor, Finley, Steampunk Center, Rafael Rodriguez, and Optimistic Avocado. You guys are the MVPs, and everybody down there in the description, a big thank you to you guys as well. Sweet dreams, everybody.